Good morning, good people. Welcome to my world. John M. Schrader here again, and I'm hoping that you're having a good day. It's May 31st, and for some reason, I think a lot of you may remember May 30th for a while, but enough about that for now. So yes, this is my first true podcast, and I do want to apologize for the delay. I was really hoping to get out here a lot sooner, but like many things that you plan for, it sometimes takes a little time to work out the kinks, the logistics, and I would always prefer to land on the side of patience and quality versus a rush job just to hit an imaginary deadline. It's been a good morning so far. After jumping out of bed around 6:30, I proceeded to do what I normally like to do in the morning. I call it my routine of activity. After playing a quick round of golf and feeding the fish, I found myself throwing axes at a new set of pine slabs I installed a week or two ago. I find that by throwing axes, at least a couple dozen of them, if I can hit the mark, I'm then ready to do some bouldering and a workout where I call it the Bobby Watson Outdoor Gym. I then began to visualize and mentally design a number of landscape projects that I'm looking forward to getting into. Recently, I just acquired about 75 tons of a variety of stone that I would like to install. But while I was doing that, I suddenly found myself talking to the groundhog as the hawk came over the top. Mr. Blue, who I call my blue heron, he then waved by as Tater and Tot, my kitty cats. And finally, I go out and I'm feeding a couple hundred fish. Oh, let's not forget the new family of geese who think they own the lake. But after checking out the 10th hole that was discovered last night while driving around in my skid steer, I realized it was almost 7:45 and I thought it was time to prepare for my day. Wait, that's only about an hour and 15 minutes. I'm confused. You're confused. Well, maybe we can work with our confusion. Maybe I need to start over. Maybe I need to tell the story that started a long time ago, and maybe I should start at the beginning. I need to share with you, I think, a number of people that I encountered at a very young age. These were people that really and truly helped shape my life. And by knowing these people, I think you'll better understand what this whole trespassing allowed is all about. I guess to understand this podcast, if I can tell you about the people who influenced my life, maybe in a roundabout way, I can hopefully influence your life for the better. 1960, on Valentine's Day, Jim and Janie Schrader brought into the new world a young guy that they decided to call John, a name that would later, believe it or not, help to create one of the more interesting mantras that I'll speak on times to come. My parents, the two people that to this day I feel so amazingly blessed to have. Although my father passed away just 5 years ago, Memorial Day, he is always on my mind, in my spirit, and he always makes me smile. A true love story, my parents, it would be a great novel, and how their love for each other would transcend the wonderful parenting and guidance in the importance of raising a family of two sons and three sisters. My father was a Navy man and later worked at a plastics company. You guys remember John C. and John H., the owners of that plastics company. Though we are not related, we were so very fortunate that my father was able to work there for many years. He was first an extrusion operator, and later he actually worked in the office with the engineers as he helped train them to learn the machines that he had used for nearly 45 years. My dad understood the importance of hard work, and yet he found the time to take us as a family camping, and he took me hunting and fishing. And I was always amazed at how much time he spent with me on these things that I learned to love. My mother was one of those people who saw the good in everyone and everybody. She was that positive force that I don't know. It was just the epitome of what a good mom should be, raising a family and showing her love to all she met. She was a very wise woman, even though she never went to college. Around the time I was 7 years old, to help the family income, she decided to open up a babysitting service. Nowadays, we would call that, what, a child enrichment center, I guess. But she did this at our house. And by being able to multitask as a full-time mom and a part-time child care provider for anyone who was between the ages of 2 and 6. You can read on the podcast on my website, A True Modern Love Story. It's a better way to understand how two people who met at a drive-in in the 1950s was so inspirational in my life. Fast forward to 1971. My first cousin, Bob Scheller, who you will hear me often refer to as one of my two guardian angels. He had led me on so many right decisions that my parents trusted him and adored him. And basically, if Bob said it was okay, I got to do it. So Bob convinced me to join a Boy Scout troop, Troop 399. He said, John, he said, you'll really enjoy this group. He says, we do a lot of outdoorsy kind of things. We're always in the woods. But more importantly, he says, you're going to meet a really cool scoutmaster, a man by the name of Bert Miller. He was an amazing man, and wow, is that an understatement. So Bert Miller, when I was 11, was a gentleman that pretty much ran this troop on his way. You see, Bert was a World War II veteran. He actually fought in the Battle of the Bulge. And after he came back from the war, Bert began his career as a parole officer. And as a parole officer, Bert got to meet a lot of young men who made some bad decisions. And it was that decision that I think made Bert become the scoutmaster that he was. I think Bert realized that too often, young men that ended up as parolees didn't necessarily always have the guidance that they needed when they were younger. I learned a lot about Bert because every Monday night we had our meetings, and about every month and a half we were out on some very fun, very exciting, very adventurous overnight. Troop 399, Sacred Heart, Evansville, Indiana. We were a group of about 30 or 40 young men, and we had the honor of knowing this man, Bert Miller. But what made Bert Miller such a huge inspiration in my life, and to this day, I still call Bert one of the greatest Americans I will ever meet. Bert was the kind of guy that he would teach us every Monday night something very inspiring. He called it a moment of inspiration. But Bert was also the kind of guy that he was not afraid to be a leader of young men and teach them how to hopefully become future leaders of tomorrow. What I was amazed about with this man was that one moment he would be articulating the perfect poem, whether it be Gunga Din or any other type of poem that would come to mind. He was also a great historian, and he taught us amazing history. He taught us how this country was developed. He taught us about the men and women who led this country to become one of the best, if not the best country ever in the history of this planet. But there was one day that when I saw Bert do what only Bert would do, that it convinced me that I was in the right place at the right time. You see, my first overnight, we went to a place called Lost Lake. And Lost Lake was a beautiful lake that we all camped around. And I was only 11. It was my first overnight. And everyone kept talking about this guy, Burt Miller. He wasn't a big guy. I mean, his stature was somewhat small, but he was definitely one that had very, very little body fat. So as we're out one Saturday morning, everyone's having a great time. It's a beautiful spring day. And all of a sudden, we start to hear all this clamor, all this excitement. And suddenly, everyone is yelling, get Burt, we just found a blue racer. At that time, I wasn't even sure what a blue racer was until I see one of my Eagle Scouts come up with about a 4.5 to 5 foot snake that had a hue of blue. Immediately, the whole troop gets together. We're standing around in a circle. And sure enough, Burt Miller strides into the circle and quickly takes the snake away from our Eagle Scout. I'm standing there, you know, somewhat impressed. This was a cool-looking snake. But what impressed me more was suddenly Burt decides to tell us exactly what a blue racer was. He gives us a quick Reader's Digest version of what makes this snake different from other snakes, why this snake is more aggressive than more snakes. They call it a blue racer because it's an extremely fast snake. But then we begin to ask the questions. And how old do you think this snake is? How big can this snake get? How many babies will this snake have? You know, the average questions that a young Boy Scout will ask when he has a snake in front of us. But all of a sudden, somebody, I think it was Chris standing next to me, he asked the question that changed my life. He said, how does this snake bite? Well, being an 11-year-old, I'm thinking, what a silly question. Of course, you know, we all know that a snake just kind of will lunge and will grab you. And we talk about how the jaws will kind of, you know, almost dislocate. That's what most people would have said. But no, this was Burt Miller. With that, he said, okay, everyone get closer. I will show you how a snake bites. And sure enough, he opens his hand between his thumb and his forefinger, and he holds it up close to the snake, and immediately the snake lunges and grabs hold of the flesh between his thumb and forefinger. At that point, the snake is now chomping down, and as he's biting, I begin to see blood dripping from Burt's hand. Again, I'm an 11-year-old kid, and I'm not exactly sure if I know what I'm witnessing. It almost felt surreal. As the snake is working its way up his hand, I now hear Burt, who did not change his voice one bit, explain exactly what the snake is doing. I see the blood continue to drip down his hand. I see the snake working its way as best it can, even though he's not moving very far between the thumb and the forefinger. And after about 3 or 4 minutes of Burt explaining in detail what is happening, how it feels, he then says, now, you've got to be careful as you take the snake off of your hand. You want to make sure you're not injuring the snake. He gently pulls the snake away, and as his hand continues to drip, he has a guy next to him who has some isopropyl alcohol. And he says, now you want to make sure that you clean the wound because you don't want to have any infections. I have just now witnessed a man who took a snake and answered a question like no one could ever answer. That moment, I realized that I was in the presence of an amazing person. Some would call him a little silly or crazy. Some would shake their heads. But for all of us who stood around the circle, and me and a few of us others with our mouths still open, I had just witnessed one of the times where Burt Miller was an individual that I promised myself I would follow him as long as I could. This was Bert Miller, the scoutmaster, who for the next 20 years allowed me to witness so many things within this country that I would have never been able to do without this scout troop. Yep, some 54 years later, I'm still associated with Troop 399. And I can honestly say that this was one of the most powerful decisions and one of the most powerful individuals that when I look at my life today, he was the inspiration that I needed. My father was a great man, but Bert Miller was the kind of gentleman who, because he had seen the world through the eyes of a World War II veteran, I was able to see this country through his eyes. You see, Bert would take us every 2 years on a very long extended trip. We would go to New York City. 2 years later, we would go to Washington, D.C. And then 2 years after that, we would go to Florida. Between those years, we would go to summer camp. But all along the way, this man was the kind of person that wanted us in the little town of Evansville, Indiana, to witness what the real world was like. I'll never forget that same summer at the age of 11, he takes us to New York. And when we go to New York, I get to see some things that I don't get to see very often as a Catholic boy in Evansville, Indiana. Bert took us to a place called Skid Row. Bert took us to Chinatown. We saw the Empire State Building. We saw Harlem. I'll never forget driving the buses through Harlem back in 71. Where Bert was smart enough to ask a couple of the local gentlemen if he would ride the buses with us and tell us the stories of what you saw and what you experienced in Harlem. We went to 42nd Street, and I will admit that opened some eyes. And if you've never heard of 42nd Street, look it up. But this was a man that knew that if he could get in front of young boys early enough, maybe, just maybe, he could teach us, he could hone us. Maybe he could figure out a way to reach into our psyche to make us not become young men that would someday need a parole officer. But maybe, just maybe, by learning the Scott motto, learning the way of the scout troop, that maybe he would have an impression on many of us to lead us down the right path. And to this day, I've seen hundreds and hundreds of times where many people who met this man at the age of 10, 11, 12, and 13 are still very active in this troop. And this troop has grown significantly. We'll talk about the troop more. I'll talk about these men that are still a part of this troop that are so very important. But no question, Bert Miller was one of those individuals that helped shape me to guide me to a place where I'm at today. Because here's what Bert would say to me: John, you can be whoever you want to be. You have the ability to be as great or as weak as you wish to be. And every time Bert would tell a story about the history of this country, about great Americans and the sacrifices they made, the things that they did that made this country amazing, he would instill in me the belief that, okay, if they can do it, I can do it. If they had that ability by doing this and this and this, maybe someday I too could do something that people could be proud of. Bert Miller, you'll hear me talk about him a lot. You'll hear me talk about scouting because it certainly is a part of my America that I think is so important for young men, especially in this time today. 1977, at the age of 17, I met another man, also inspiring. But unlike Bert, who I knew for years and years and years, this man I only met for about an hour and a half. In my junior year at Modern Day, I was honored to become one of two people that got to go to a seminar. It was the Daughters of the American Revolution. If you look it up, these are individuals that can trace their lineage all the way back to the American Revolution, and they are somehow related to someone during that period of time who fought in that war. I was able to go that night into a large room that had many students from different high schools from all over southern Indiana and southern Illinois and Kentucky. And we were honored that night by a gentleman who spoke to us for about 20 minutes. He was a person I'd heard a little bit about, but had never met before. But he was kind of the buzz for Evansville because he was a coach, one of the new coaches for one of the local colleges. Evansville has two colleges, the University of Southern Indiana, but the older college is the University of Evansville. And this gentleman tonight was a guy by the name of Bobby Watson. And Bobby told us a very amazing story about how he got into coaching, about the importance of what it took to make his athletes the best of the best. I listened to this man because, I don't know, I've always been a person that if I can hear an inspirational speaker, I always take notice. I always enjoy hearing inspirational stories. I think they're the kind of things that help motivate you when no one else is around. As I'm listening to Bobby talk about the team and what he's doing with the team, he then tells us this. He gives us a definition. The definition of what pride is. He said, you know, there's several different types of pride. He said, you know, some people are proud of themselves and some people take pride, and maybe it can be negative. But Bobby's idea of pride was what can you do with pride that you can be a better person? You can be a better husband. You can be a better father. You can be a better coach. You can be a better athlete. And then he gave me a definition that still today is hung on my wall. He said, pride, the best kind of pride is that which compels one to do their very best work, especially when no one is looking. Pride is that which compels one to do their very best work when no one is looking. He said, you know, his players, he said, a lot of them are really good players. But what makes the good player the great player? It's not always what you see out on the court in front of the crowd. He said his really, really good players that he loves to recognize are those ones that after practice is over and the lights are turned out, he said he'll hear the basketball bouncing. He'll see a light come on. He says he'll see that player out there who is going the extra 20 or 30 minutes. No one is around to see him, but he knows that by doing this extra workout, it's going to make him a better player. I wrote that down because, you know, I thought, man, that is something I think I could use. At the time I was a wrestler at Modern Day, that was definitely my sport. We'll talk about wrestling a whole lot in the podcast to come. But it was something that moment that I had never really heard it said that way. I wrote it down on a napkin, and I remember after the speech was over and the dinner was done, as we were all starting to leave, I wanted to introduce myself to this man that had just given me a small little something that I thought I could hold on to. I introduced myself after everyone had left. Hi, Bobby, my name is John Schrader. I just want to tell you that I really was inspired by your speech tonight. I really want to tell you that this idea and your definition of pride, I think it makes a lot of sense. He said thank you and he wished me well, and I thought someday we would see each other again. I remember going home that night and telling my parents about the nice meal, and I told them about this guy that I had met. I told him that he gave me something inspirational that, I don't know, maybe if I use it, maybe if I dwell on it, maybe I can become a better person. Life went on and everything seemed to be working pretty well. As a junior now in college, it was the winter of 77. And I remember I was home working on a paper for one of my classes. I was upstairs and I was typing. I was a very slow typer. This was back in the day, way before electronic typewriters. And I had my radio on and I was listening to some music. And my mind was really just kind of, what was this paper going to be about? Suddenly, the radio station just kind of went off. And then the next thing we heard, an announcer came on and said he apologized for interrupting the program, but there had been a plane crash in Evansville, Indiana tonight. We don't know many of the details. We will keep you posted, but we do have to announce that there has been a plane crash. I remember thinking what that could be or where and who was on the plane. I tried to get back to my assignment, but my mind just wouldn't go there. Suddenly downstairs in the living room, I heard my parents have the TV on, and they too were hearing a similar announcement. As I went downstairs, I remembered thinking, this did not sound good. This just did not feel right. Sure enough, a few hours later, we got more of the details. And as they came across, they talked about a plane crash of the U of E basketball team. If you look up A Night of Ashes, you'll see a documentary a guy by the name of Joe Atkinson put together. Yeah, that was the night I found out that the gentleman who actually gave me his definition of pride, Bobby Watson, the coach of the University of Evansville, was one of those individuals that perished on that plane that night. To this day, I still struggle when I think about him. I think about the tragedy. I think about what happened to this community, all the people that were affected, the lives that were changed forever. And for me, all I could do was go up to my room. And there on the wall where I had put the definition of what the best kind of pride was, all I could do was stare at the wall and think I was never going to ever get to meet Bobby Watson again. A man who just a few months earlier, in 20 minutes, gave me the inspiration that at the age of 64 today, I have used and felt tens of thousands of times. A phrase that when I am by myself, when there is no one around, I find myself thinking, what can I do that can improve just a little bit of where I'm at? Can I pick up that piece of something that will improve the landscape? Can I go out and say something nice that might make someone's day? Can I be helpful? Can I be courteous? Can I be kind to someone? Amazingly, some 50 years later, I still remember the night of the speech. I still remember that man and what he gave me in just a very long sentence. He gave me something that can help transform my life to hopefully help a lot of people who had never met this man. You know, I think, and I've seen the documentary of that crash, and I think of each and every one of those individuals who were on that plane, the other coaches, all the players, those young men who were just starting their lives. Marvin Bates, who was a very well-known sports announcer. That plane crash definitely changed a community. It changed the world. But for me, the one thing that was not lost was a memory that I hoped that someday, if I did my life the way Bobby would want me to do it, someday maybe I could retell a story and show how he was the inspiration to a big part of it. Years later, I went to USI. I enjoyed my freedom there. I decided to go to college because my first summer out of high school, I was a hod carrier for a man that I truly respected, but I certainly knew I was not ready for a career life. And after 4 years of taking a lot of psychology, a whole lot of communications, I graduated in 1983 with a degree in communications, an emphasis in public relations, and a cup that you'll soon see someday, and a minor in psychology. I loved psychology. Psychology where you could see into a person's mind and read a lot about a person, what they're like, the good, the bad, sometimes the crazy. And upon graduating, I had an opportunity because I had worked a couple summers with a guy mowing grass. I had an opportunity to do something that for my family was extremely rare. I decided to start my own business. And starting this business, a lot of people would ask me years later, how in the world did you decide to go from college and start cutting grass in the city of Evansville? The company was called Custom Mowing Service because I felt like, yes, we were a customized company that we did mowing better than anyone else. The funny part is that back in the day, being part of a mowing company, I was like maybe one of four businesses in the entire city of Evansville that was doing this kind of work. But luckily for me, I knew that one of the companies was a place called Woodland Condominiums. Woodland Condominiums, back in the 70s and 80s and still today, housed some of the most successful and brilliant businessmen in the city of Evansville. It was a condominium complex that was off the road, very few people knew about. But it was a place that I was willing to give it a shot to try my own gig, to do my own deal, to have my independence, to be a business owner. You see, what a lot of people didn't know was that by working with this gentleman for the first couple years in his company, I found out what he was making in one day just mowing this condominium complex and another condominium complex called Northampton, just a short distance away. I discovered that in 1983, this man with a couple push mowers, a pickup truck, two weed eaters, and a blower, that this guy was grossing about $800 in one day with just two people. A lot of people didn't know this, but as I was graduating college, a lot of my fraternity friends, which we'll talk about later, who were engineers or accountants or going into some field that was supposed to make them a lot of money someday, just by asking the simple question, what are you going to be making a week at your job? Many of them told me they would be making somewhere in that $500 to $600 range in a week. And yet this guy was making $800 in one day just pushing a couple lawnmowers. That was enough of an incentive to me as a 22-year-old kid. Let's try this business thing out. If I can make $800 in a day, and he had a lot of other accounts, I think I should at least give it a try. My parents thought I was crazy. You're actually going to be pushing a lawnmower after going to college? I think they were skeptical. My father, who, you know, was in a union most of his life, he wasn't too wild about business owners. But there was another factor. Another factor that goes back to Burt Miller. One of the things Burt taught me as a young person was how to be confident. How the importance of confidence was going to take me onto roads that many, many people may not want to go on. The importance of confidence, Burt used to say, was simple. I don't care who you're talking to, John. Don't ever hesitate to ask questions. You're going to be curious about everything. You're going to want to know everything. Don't be afraid to ask the people you want to become how they got there. So one of the reasons I thought that owning this business was important at this time in my life, because I would now be sharing time with individuals who were business owners in the city of Evansville. Individuals who everyone thought and looked up to for what they had accomplished. One particular man, his name was John Newhouse. John Newhouse, I had heard of for years. John Newhouse owned a company called Double Cola. It was a company that bottled different drinks. Double Cola tastes a little bit like Coke. He also had a drink called Ski. Tastes a little bit like Mountain Dew. But for West Siders and people around Evansville, Ski was one of the best tasting drinks around. John Newhouse was the first condominium that on every Wednesday I would begin to mow. John Newhouse was the guy that I would be out there 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and he would come out and always talk to me. He is a super friendly man. He always asked how my day was going, and he always treated me with great respect, even though I was just the kid pushing a lawnmower around his house. But John Newhouse was also the guy that I felt, if I really and truly wanted to be successful as a businessman, if I really and truly wanted to be able to go places someday, I needed to ask this man a lot of questions. And what I loved about John was he was always willing to answer. It wasn't long before I asked John to, hey, would you be willing to look at my business plan? Would you be willing to kind of help me along and show me what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong? And it wasn't much more than a week after that that I was in his office. And John Newhouse, who had a whole lot of things going on in his world, took the time to take some young kid who was doing nothing more than pushing a lawnmower, weed whipping the sidewalks, blowing off the leaves. He took the time often to work with me on my plan. John Newhouse never gave me a penny towards my business, but he gave me so much more. He gave me wisdom that only a seasoned owner of a company could give. He ran a multi-million dollar company, was well known throughout the area, and here he was taking the time to show a kid cutting grass how he could improve his business. He talked to me about profit margins. One of the quick things he said was he told me not to go out there for less than $35, no matter how small the yard was. Whether I can cut it in 15 minutes or an hour, don't go anywhere for less than $35 an hour. And I was confused at first because in 1983, $35 an hour, which he equated to about $75 to $80 an hour, wasn't bad for a grass cutter. But he told me that you will spend way too much time driving from here to there for people who have in their mind a $10 or $15 job. He was absolutely right. The amount of time I saved, I was able to put into the business. The next thing he told me, and this was even crazier, John, for your first year, when you start your business, leave one day open. I would usually cut from Mondays to Saturday afternoon, sometimes be done on Friday. But what do you mean, John? Keep one day open. Just trust me, John. Just trust me. You leave one day open and let's see what happens. Because John's theory was, with these different groups of people that were out mowing a lot of these commercial complexes, maybe not all of them were doing the job they needed to do. Sure enough, by week four and week five, I was getting calls from different complexes, apartment complexes, businesses that were almost in a panic. John, we really need a mowing company to come out. Would you be willing to talk with us? You see, what had happened was many of these companies were always going for the lowest price. But what they realized after getting the lowest price was that the quality of the product, the quality of the company wasn't there to follow up. So sure enough, when I would go out to these places that were now not been cut for 2 or 3 weeks because the company that had promised them they would be there was no longer there, I now was able to not charge 10 or 20. I was able to charge 30 to 40% more than I normally would have. You see, John was smart enough to know that businesses will first try to find the best price. But many times that doesn't always work well when the best price is by a company who can't fulfill their promises. So sure enough, by leaving that one day open, every year I was getting accounts that were 40% higher than what I would have originally bid because I thought I would have filled up the week. He realized that, yes, if you don't do that correctly and you try to hire new people at the spur of the moment, you're going to have problems there. These are just two examples of how talking to a multimillionaire, talking to an extremely successful businessman at the age of 21, I did not have the resources. I did not have the other things. I did not have parents or relatives who had ever owned their own business. But I did have the confidence to be able to ask this man the questions that I needed to ask. And all through my life, one of the things I did realize was that confidence was something, because of a young man named Burt Miller, that allowed me to always feel that I wasn't going to be in the dark because I was afraid to ask the question. CPR, confidence, patience, and respect. It's a formula we're going to talk about a whole lot on this podcast. It's a formula that I found years ago that when I follow all three of them, 90% of the time I find success. And those times when I don't find success or something creates a hiccup, I can almost always look back and find that one of these three things I did not do well. So here we are. At least today, I think you have a little bit of an insight as to why I became the person I am. It was not because of what I did, but it was because of me listening to the people that inspired me. You'll also hear me talk a lot about a guy by the name of Mike Gable. When I started podcasts, my dream has always been I want Mike to be the first or one of the first individuals. Mike Gable, he's an icon here in Evansville. Modern day football and wrestling coach. just named last year the 2023 National Coach of the Year. I was honored to be able to coach wrestling with Mike Gable. And why I think the world of Mike is because I can honestly tell you that I did have the honor of seeing this man create inspiration and motivation, particularly in wrestlers who I watched him time and time and time again know how to get into the minds of young athletes, how to make them realize, believe, and then go out and perform ungodly matches. So hopefully, Mike, if you're out there, I'm going to ask you again and again and again. When I start to have guests on my podcast, I'd love for Mike to be there. So I think that gives you guys a little bit of history. I will refer back to these people often in the podcast. Gosh, I promised you a little bit of humor. Okay, here's three quick ones, all right? We'll call them just the fast three quick dad jokes. Why do you never, ever, ever play poker in a jungle? Never play poker in a jungle because there are just too many cheetahs, all right? Number two, what'd the fish say when he hit the hard wall? Swimming around, it was dark, it was cold. Bam, he hits the wall. What'd he say? Damn. Yes, he hit the dam. All right, third, his best friend is swimming around with him also. Swimming. He sees him hit the wall, and sure enough, he goes and he runs right in the wall right after he did. What did he say to him? What a dumb bass. See, they were a school of bass swimming around. So those are the quick three jokes of the day. Please feel free to share them with anyone out there. As I begin to close, look forward to talking to you all again soon. You're going to hear me talk about my four loves. I love my wife and family. I love my God. I love my country. And hell, I found out a long time ago, I just love people, but not always in that order. And we'll explain a lot more on that in podcasts to come. So with that being said, if you are an individual who has ever considered maybe, just maybe, you might want to own your own business someday, you might want to do your own gig, you're tired of working for someone else, and you want the empowerment to know what it's like to be your own boss, hopefully I can help you with that. I've got anywhere from 25 to 40 reasons, in my opinion, that some kid that started out pushing a lawnmower around some subdivision decided that, you know what, it was one of the greatest decisions I ever made. And using the confidence, using patience, and understanding the value of respect for your fellow man, maybe I can help you get there someday. But we'll go through that in a lot of detail. So with that being said, I hope everybody has a great day. Again, thank you for listening. John M. Schrader, go out there and have an empowering day.